Today, I'm joined by Jacob Grichar, a transformational coach, intuitive healer, and guide for those ready to step into their highest potential. Jacob weaves together deep energetic insight with practical tools for growth, helping people clear blocks, activate purpose, and align with their soul's truth. In this conversation, we explore Jacob's unique path into intuitive work, the role of energy in healing, and how reconnecting to the body's inner wisdom opens the door to manifestation and transformation. His grounded yet expansive approach invites us to remember who we truly are and to embody that in everyday life. So let's go. Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to the Manifestation Therapy Podcast. I'm Judy Holly, clinical social worker, trauma therapist, master manifestation coach, and creator of Manifestation Therapy. This podcast blends the wisdom of universal principles with the transformative neuroscience of manifestation, aligning conscious creation with evidence-based healing. Whether you're a practitioner or on your own path of growth, you'll find inspiration for an abundant, aligned life. In each episode, I share strategies, insights, and conversations with healers, mental health professionals, coaches, thought leaders, and individuals with powerful personal stories. Before we begin, a quick note. The views and opinions expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect my personal beliefs or the principles of manifestation therapy. This is a space for open conversation and exploration, so take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and always honor your own intuition. Let's start with your journey. So how would you describe the journey that has led you here today?
Yeah, I would describe it as very stormy and very exciting and very adventurous. I started when I was about 13 years old with chronic skin disease and a lot of health conditions. And I actually got into body-based practices, specifically body-based meditation, around that time as well. And in a couple of months, my skin disease went completely away. And that just blew my mind and blew my world to the possibility of like everything that we don't know. And at the time, also being a really angry teenager with a lot of things that I wasn't able to be in tune with and be able to express. And growing up in a very small household in a very small country, I just decided to leave everything and start traveling the world. So that was kind of the entrance to a bit of a bigger, more open world and spirituality and personal development. So when I was about 15 years old, I was just devouring Joe Dispenza, Tony Robbins, everything that I would get my hands on, every single book on self-help. I was studying Upanishads, the Advaita Vedanta, so the Hindu non-dual traditions. And when I was 18, leaving Slovenia, started traveling the world. Went from homelessness to hospitality jobs to all these different wild experiences, from near-death experiences to being robbed to the kindness of strangers and the most beautiful, you know, adventures. And when I was about 21, I studied yoga in India. When I was 23, I moved to the Amazon and lived with indigenous people for about 2.5 years in and out of the Amazon, studying plant medicine traditions. And at about 26, I got deep into the space of somatics and nervous system regulation work, coaching. I started working with world-renowned coaches, being mentored by pioneer in somatics, co-authored the best-selling book, started getting interviewed on podcasts. And since then, the journey's really been about a lot of service and a lot of growth, which is where I'm at right now.
Right. Okay. Amazing. What was one of your biggest challenges?
In life in general, the biggest challenge that I can think of was getting to the core root of what is driving me. Majority of my life I've been avoiding and trying to numb and trying to run away. And even personal development became an escape. And so did plant medicine and a lot of different things that I would use in very clever ways, right? What I believe is that the more intelligent we are, the smarter our coping mechanisms and ways of escaping and avoiding dealing with things.
Yes.
I see that with a lot of clients who are like highly intellectual. It's much easier to find justifications of why we're not feeling or allowing ourselves to be with something. Right. So my biggest challenge was really unraveling those parts of myself that were still in resistance, but with very clever ways. Like being in love addiction and chasing validation through relationships. Mm. And at the same time, having like addiction, quote unquote, to personal development and plant medicines because of what I would get from these cathartic highs as opposed to having a sustained long-term integration practice.
Right. It sounds like you kind of went from like a rescuer into like more support.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very much in the rescuer role for majority of my early adulthood. Yeah.
And what keeps you grounded now? And especially like in between clients, because I know as a trauma therapist, it's so important to ground. In
yeah.
Between.
You're actually the second person who asked me that in the last 2 days. And it's the first time I've been asked this question, which is really interesting.
Oh, interesting.
So what I've noticed is that there's only a few reasons why there would be some incompleteness in the process, or why I wouldn't feel good after the session. And the first one is if something gets triggered inside of me that has a corresponding imprint to my clients. So if I'm taking a client through a really intense traumatic imprint resolution, and something about her or his imprint is like triggering something inside of me, maybe like a similar memory or the opposite on the other side of the spectrum. For example, if they're dealing with self-betrayal, where in relationship, I was the one that, you know, wasn't allowing the other person to fully be validated in their own. I've noticed like early stages of my somatic coaching journey, where it would be quite a lot of that. I would be triggered by different people's processes, not in the way that they would bother me, but in the way that I would just notice there's like a tinge of sadness that would come through, or like a bit of grief or something that felt incomplete about it. The second thing is oftentimes if the session feels incomplete. So what happens in the body is the energy that is stuck just wants to discharge and it wants to be completed. That's why we reenact different traumatic imprints over and over again, right? Because, for example...
Trying to process.
Yeah. Because, for example, somebody who was in the victim of abuse space when they were growing up, they're looking for that resolution through different relationships. So they would choose the same partner who resembles the parent with whom they experienced this abuse. And that's for the, we look at it through Western psychology, we look at that as neurosis, right? But really it's just like psyche's desire to reenact it so that it gets completed. Because we want a different scenario. We want the completeness and we want the discharge of the energy.
Yeah.
So sometimes in the sessions, rarely it happens that the energy doesn't get fully complete. We go into the traumatic imprint and then it's a lot of layers to unravel and it doesn't get fully complete. And in those spaces, I notice after the session, there's this like oftentimes like a bit of heaviness that kind of like lingers after. And that's also like where the importance of like doing like coaching containers is, as opposed to doing one-off sessions, because things get brought up in the surface and it can be a very messy process. And then the last thing I would say is like when I do too much, which is funny because I was just mentioning that before the call, I create spaces between clients where I get to like actually like be with myself and like make sure that I nurture myself, because early on in my coaching journey, I just opened up my calendar and I got booked out. And that was like back to back and it was just too much for my nervous system. So I would say if all these three are complete, if I make sure that I'm a clear vessel, a clear channel, that I operate from like a very clear space, that I don't get triggered, or if I do, I deal with it after the sessions with my own therapist or my mentors and then come back as a clear space. And then if everything gets completed, or when everything gets completed and when I don't do too much, that's like my grounding space.
Right.
And when all of these three are met, I've noticed the sessions actually give more energy because I get to see the transformation and I get to serve and I get to do the thing that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah, perfect. It's very similar for me. It's all counter transference is huge, but it's always putting it back on the purpose of supporting the other person, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. And when you live in the space where you just want to be in purpose and you see how the impact that it's creating is just like it fuels more.
Yes. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It gives us energy too, I think. What is your daily kind of routine? What could you not have a day without?
I wake up in the morning, I pray, I meditate, I work out. Those are non-negotiables for me every single morning. I live in spaces where I make sure that I get sunshine pretty much almost every single day. So I kind of chase the sun in different seasons. That's why I move around so much. So summers in Europe or North America, winters in South America or Cape Town, South Africa, or sometimes Asia, whatever that is. I love sunshine. I thrive on that. Turning off all technology at about like 9 p.m. normally. I make some exceptions when I travel, when I change time zones, depending on where my clients are at. So for example, right now that got pushed back for an hour and a half. But generally that feels really important. And then recently I've gotten into an auditory technology that works through polyvagal theory, developed by Stephen Porges, called Safe and Sound Protocol and Rest and Restore Protocols.
Oh yeah.
So those ones have really become a part of my daily meditative practice. And as I became a certified practitioner of that as well, I just practice that with myself. So I take it as a just like my daily dose of nervous system regulation.
Right. I've heard that's really good for kids too, for kids and youth.
Yeah. Yeah. They have some audio engineered for with like really, really funky kids songs. So it's really fun to listen to those sometimes as well.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. What would you say is a practice you might use for someone who is stuck with, like, people refer to them as limiting beliefs. I call them kind of imprinted messages, but those kind of mindset just completely stuck.
Yeah. I look at everything from the lens of like who we are being, right? I don't deal with symptoms as much as a lot of people do. So I don't go specifically into like the beliefs or like working with, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy or parts work or any of that, although I use all of that as well. But beyond that, I look at like, who is the person being in the moment and why? Because you're never really stuck unless you're glued to the chair, right? And that's something that one of my mentors taught me.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, you're either doing something or you're not doing something. You're doing something that you know you shouldn't be doing, or you're not doing something you know that you should be doing. And then the question is like, who are you being in relation to what you're doing or not doing and why? So that's kind of like coming more towards like the core belief system or like root cause, let's say, instead of like dealing with the symptoms of it. So when somebody is feeling stuck, normally what happens is a part of them feels like they are staying safe when they stay in the same space. So when we get to like the core beliefs that are there, like the core part that is believing that, then we get to meet that part as well, work through that. And this is where normally somatics come in my practice,
right?
Which is then we get to process that through the body and make sure that like traumatic imprint gets unraveled. Because also if we look at parts work, right, none of the parts really want us to thrive. The biggest desire of our parts, different parts in our psyche, is not that we thrive and have the best lives ever. Their desire is to keep us safe, which is a good enough life.
To survive.
Right. So even when a part of you is like really wanting like an epic relationship, but a part of you through familiarity learns that chaos is safe, that's how you get love through like emotional highs and lows, then a part of us will keep seeking that chaos in relationships to stay quote unquote safe. So it doesn't have the desire for the most evolutionary, expansive relationships or large amounts of money. It's like, no, the amount of money that we know is what's safe. So we get to meet these parts in the process. But beyond the parts, I would just say like it's going to the actual core of like, where is this actually coming from? Who am I being when I say that I'm stuck? What am I stuck in? What am I doing? What am I not doing? What am I avoiding doing? And as we unpack that at the level of the psyche,
right,
then we could go into the body and actually process that all the way up.
Nice. Okay. How about, what is one of the somatic exercises that you might teach someone?
I would start with people with tracking the sensations in the body. So it's super simple. It's like tuning into the body and then you ask yourself, what am I noticing? And the question here isn't,
right,
it's something I unpacked in a couple of different containers recently. It's not the question of like, what am I feeling? That's what most people answer when I ask them, what are you noticing in the body? It's like, oh, I notice anger.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, you're not actually noticing anger. Anger has a sensation to it that you associate with being anger, right? But the sensation would be the heat in the stomach or like the contraction in the chest or like the shoulders or the fists tensing or
the jaw.
Jaw normally, yeah. Jaw and face. And the fear would be like the pit in the stomach, right? So we go into the sensations first. And something that I teach people to start tuning into like the somatics would be actually track the sensations in the body, not the emotions and not the stories, not the behaviors, not the impulses, but just coming to the sensations, which are heat, pulsation, tingling, contraction, tension, heaviness, tightness, warmth, you know, words like that are descriptive sensory words. And the more we learn how to do that, the more we get in touch with all these parts of our being. the more we get to differentiate between that mm-hmm. and the emotions, that and the stories.
Right.
And then it opens up a whole new world that is the space between the trigger and the reaction.
Yeah, and the ability to release it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In your story, who would you say or how did you find your biggest resiliency? Because they say that there's always one person that kind of teaches us that self-love or connection. Was there someone really important on your story?
Who taught me the most resiliency?
I would say
my brother in a way, but not necessarily
right.
directly as a mentor, but more so through really pushing me to the edge when I was a kid. He's also a martial artist, 2 years older, a lot of rivalry between us. So there was a lot of really intense physical confrontation, let's say, when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I definitely learned a lot from that. And then going into martial arts, the level of discipline that I developed is what's serving me right now in every area of my life.
Yeah, I bet.
So I'm noticing even the way that I'm building my business that is like continuously growing and expanding, a lot of the things that I've learned through martial arts are really what supports me in it. Because I also do a lot of business coaching. Because
it's all about mindfulness,
yeah.
right?
I do a lot of business coaching, and what I'm noticing is a lot of people tend to follow their emotions, right? I don't feel like doing this today. And in martial arts, we were taught it doesn't matter how you feel. You're going to do it, right?
Ah. Oh, I like that.
And there's a level of resilience that entrepreneurship takes. It's, you know, doesn't matter how you feel. Don't follow your mood. Follow the plan. And as you follow the plan actually ends up happening. But it occurs to me through just coaching a lot of people that this generation is becoming very soft in many ways. And I believe that some of us who were raised in more like martial artists and like physically challenging environments and like maybe not very abundant Western countries got also raised in a lot more resilience in that way. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily one person. I would say it was more like a growing up situation for me.
A system.
Yeah.
How do you balance divine timing versus taking action?
Take action all the time, despite anything.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Okay.
And then I trust that the divine timing is just happening. There's a gap. It's a very interesting question, and I feel like I can unpack it in so many different ways. I think the clarity comes after action. So the more we act, the more the path shows up, right? You don't know the entire path of what it's going to look like. You just start walking and the path occurs in front of you. It just appears in front of you. And then what tends to happen is the more action we take, when it's action taken from the right space, the more the universe aligns to support that vision. But when the action is taken from a quote unquote wrong space, then I would say the timing just ends up falling short or the synchronicities don't happen so much. And that's what right. I've been seeing, especially from the places of like, where do we operate from? Because the action can look the same, but where we're coming from is different at the level of the being, right? Somebody can go to the gym because they hate themselves and they hate how they look. And somebody could go to the gym, do exactly the same workouts and the same exercises because they love their body and they care about themselves so much.
Right.
So when we change the intention and the frequency at which we're showing up in these spaces, I believe the outcome changes a lot as well, because this is the frequency that we embody in those cells. So when I take action and I serve clients, I serve them because I want to, because I believe that that's the best thing, because I actually create the game that I like playing in my life. And I could be taking the same action as somebody who's just serving their client because they want to make money. And I'm just watching how, you know, the business is growing because it has the frequency of service. Less so about, you know, needing to create a certain level of value to feel the gap in the marketplace in order to make a certain amount of money. This is all just like systems and structures. And if we can get away from like systems and strategies and more towards who we're being, we're just going to have much more joyful and happier life. And as a byproduct, we often tend to make more money and have better relationships as well.
We end up getting taken care of. And speaking of that, like, where do you see yourself going? Like, what is it that you hope for in the next 5 years?
I'm taking it one step at a time, but there's a few things that I'm not quite ready to share, but probably a pivot in within the business that I've created. So currently we're running a 12-week long program for women.
Okay.
Moving through trauma, addiction, relational challenges, normally high-performing, high-achieving women who on the surface might seem like they have it all, but on the inside, there's just a level of like dissatisfaction and not waking up, you know, like fully excited and joyous every single day. So we take them through 5 calls a week for 12 weeks through different topics and like really rigorous ontological inquiry and really deep level of like somatic processes in front of the group, in the community. As we continue doing this, this is something that we've been really lit up about with my business partner, and we've developed a certification program through our mentor, Judith Johnson. So we certify people in somatics as well, which is something we just rolled out about a few weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, and we're launching that in the next 2 weeks. So this is kind of like the evolution that it's taking right now, and just continuing on that trajectory, and then also like pivoting in certain different spaces that I'll share more about for my social media in the next month or years.
Okay. I've specialized with addiction for quite some time, and it's socially, it's getting way worse because of social media and the tech addiction that's happening now, and COVID kind of played a role in that. Yeah. What about how does ADHD and neurodivergency kind of, because more and more women working with them are getting diagnosed with late ADHD and it's being seen differently. And sometimes myself anyway, knowing when I work with clients, coaching or therapy, the ADHD ones are, first of all, they're attracted to me because I'm ADHD, but it's handled just a little bit differently. How do you see that kind of energy work with them?
I don't work with them any differently than with anyone else. I believe they're just labels that don't really mean that much. And I know that this is a bit of a controversial point of view. I consider myself highly ADHD, self-diagnosed. And I know for a fact that if I was born and raised in America right now, I would be put on a lot of medication. But because I wasn't, I was born and raised in Slovenia, and there's just kind of like a natural way of being, which is like, yeah, a child has a lot of energy and a child has a limited amount of focus. And we just looked at it very differently back then than it is right now in more like the mainstream focus. And I do know that the level of the discipline that I got to take as personal responsibility, putting myself as a cause, really created a lot of powerful shifts in my world.
Yeah.
So I still notice how sometimes I lose focus in certain moments and certain scenarios, and I need to, you know, I have like the hyper focus moments, and then I have like a lot of other moments where if something doesn't fully catch my attention, I lose it. And I just, you know, there's a level of just like self-responsibility, which is like, okay, I'll deal with that and I'll still show up. So being called forwards, I think in many different containers is a possibility to get away from the labels and just be like, okay, like I'm working with what I've got and I get to take full accountability for how I'm showing up despite of any other labels. What I found when the labels are fully allowed in the space or like even encouraged in the space, it does offer a lot of bypassing and it does offer a lot of a possibility to escape the responsibility, which is like, oh, I didn't do that because I have ADHD or because I'm this or because I'm that or, and that is totally okay if that happens and totally understandable. And there's a level of self-responsibility that is not existing. So in the space of like calling people forwards, I think it's the most empowering thing to just not use that. At least that's been my personal experience.
I found that it's like lately, especially on social media, it's I have ADHD, so I do this X, Y, or Z. But it's really they had trauma and that's how people handled them. Because they were unfocused. So it's not really ADHD. It's just an effect of how you were treated.
And I would say that a lot of air quotes, neurodivergence again, and a lot of different things that appear confusing in the psyche are just a result of unresolved trauma.
Yeah.
So when somebody has a big thing that has happened in their childhood that they've never really fully processed, we tend to escape also into different identities, right? It's safer for me to be a people pleaser. It's safe for me to be more feminine. It's safe to be for me to be more masculine, right? Especially, you know, people who experience sexual abuse when they're younger. And then in terms of like neurodivergence, a lot of traumatic imprints that haven't been processed do cause different things in the psyche, like PTSD or CPTSD. And when we get the labels allow us to like better understand what is going on in certain spaces, but if we let labels take charge of why, you know, as a justification of why we're doing certain things or not doing certain things, then it loses the ability to be a supportive thing. If I use the label ADHD so that I can understand my behaviors better, but then I go into the root cause of that and work on resolving the root cause of that, I do believe that every single condition or every single symptom can get resolved if we go deep enough.
Right, if we go deep.
And even Stanley Rosenberg, the author of polyvagal theory, he was doing different point holding on the body, and he was able to cure autism, for example.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
So if we look at autism as a symptom of an unresolved issue, right, instead of as a terminal condition, a lot of things tend to change and can change. And the same with ADHD. If I look at my upbringing and where that got developed from as a coping strategy, a lot of things will open up and it suddenly becomes a curable condition. And my business partner has dealt with very extreme OCD through his entire life. And it got cured through deep trauma work and psychedelic therapy, specifically ibogaine.
Yeah. I've helped people cure their OCD with brain sparring, so I get that. Yeah. It's all in the body. Yeah. What is your, I think we've already covered it, but what is your core message? What would you, if anything, one message that you could deliver to people, what would it be?
I would say focus on the roots and not chase the fruits.
Yeah, I like that.
It's going back to the core of everything and not like chasing the symptoms or chasing the results either. So like in business, for example, if you focus on the service and not on chasing money, in coaching spaces, if you focus on like the results of, you know, the clients and the value that you provide and not on how many do you have or what that brings into your life. If you don't focus on like, how do I resolve the symptoms of my conditions, but focus on like, what do I get to do inside of myself?
Yeah.
What do I get to clear? What do I get to process? How do I tend to the soil of my life instead of chasing things outside of me? And then you just observe what happens.
My book is all about the universal principles, like divine oneness and law of vibration, law of attraction. That's the big one. How do you integrate that kind of the energetic principles or manifestation into your practice?
Not directly. More so as a byproduct of being a clear channel. My work mainly focuses on what can we clear inside of the body to be the purest in our understanding of what God or the universe is, right? And I come from a more of a non-dual tradition. So I went very deep into the studies of Advaita Vedanta. And through that perspective, it's seen that the world is made by God, just like in every other tradition, really. But then it goes into like the understanding that there is something called the Maya, which is the illusion. And this illusion is the illusion of separation, which is when we start thinking that we are separate from God. It's like a wave on the ocean. And we see ourselves as like a separate entity, right? I'm the wave and there's other waves as we look in the ocean. But if we go deep enough into ourselves, we realize that we are the same as ocean. We are the ocean. So even though we seem and appear as a separate wave, we're also the ocean and we're also the same as every other wave. So the way I integrate that is through like very experiential moments. So for example, when we go through a somatic process and there's a massive release that happens and like cathartic experience and something gets cleared and purified at the level of the body and the psyche, there's often a space that gets created. And in that spaciousness, which in polyvagal theory, that's like the ventral vagal space. It's our rest and digest, social engagement, which is the clarity of just being in a clear, calm, nervous state. So when we're in those spaces, we're much more open to the understanding of like who we really are.
Yeah.
So it's like going into the depths of ourselves and we get to just like step away and just see like, wow, okay, who is the witness that's witnessing? I'm not the thoughts. I'm not the sensations. I'm not the emotions. I'm the one that's witnessing. But then if I can see who's witnessing, then who's the one that's witnessing the witness? And this is like the deepest inquiry in non-dual traditions, which is who is self, who is Atman. Right. And when we realize that at like an experiential level, it doesn't matter what are the words that we give it, right? I just love the non-dual terminology.
Mm-hmm.
But if we read the Bible, for example, in the same way, it's described in it in a very similar sense.
Right.
So yeah, the way I integrate that is not very directly. It's more so towards the end when the opening gets created.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resting in that space and a lot of awareness. And then we also build in the practices such as like meditation, for example, and prayer are through the entire coaching container, no matter if it's group containers or working one-on-one with people.
Yeah,
they're kind of like non-negotiable because this is how we really develop this relationship with meditation, with ourselves, with the Atman, and the prayer with God, with the divine.
Yeah, and it's all connection and just different wording for how it works, right?
Exactly.
I notice when people go really deep into their healing, it's there's a bigger picture than what I am, and how I am connected.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to put out there that I haven't asked you?
I can come up with a lot of extra things to put out there. I would say when it comes, just something that is intuitively coming up right now that could be very supportive for people is if we look at where we came from through psychology, right? It's as Western psychology, who we chose as our grandfather is Freud, which is based in dysfunction. And if we look at more like the Adlerian psychology, it's more about like being at the cause, right? Instead of like, I am inherently broken human that needs to keep going into the traumatic imprints and ripping things out of the psyche and finding more things that are wrong with my parents. And if I can't find anything, then with my grandparents. If we look at more so of like, where are we at the cause and how can we like move forwards? It's a much more powerful approach where we get to take more responsibility for our actions. And basically the distinction here is just positioning ourselves at the cause, at the causality. So less of like, I am this way because this happened to me, and more so, I choose to recall that this happened to me so that I can stay this way. And it just puts us at the cause. So it's like, the more you can take responsibility, the more you will grow. And this is going across every single thing. Yeah. In relationships, the more you can take responsibility for why it didn't work, for example, the more you're going to grow from the experience. In business, the more you can be like, okay, it's not working because of me, because of this and this and this, the more again you can change. But the more we put things away on the other things or on the other people, the more we actually like limit ourselves and where we can go.
And then you end up staying in a victim stance.
Yeah.
That's very much the law of cause and effect. I love the philosophy of, and it's only my own opinion, that we choose our parents and we choose the path that we're coming into. Every day I like thank my children for choosing me as their mom because I feel so blessed. And it just kind of helps understand as well my own path. I chose my parents and what I was going to face with them for reasons. So it kind of gives me that accountability, finding lessons in the difficult times, right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's a very empowering narrative too.
Yeah, I love it. Where can people find you?
So anyone who enjoyed this, really, you can just reach out on Instagram to me. It's JAKOBGRICAR, and I'm sure we're going to link it to somewhere below. So just reach out, send a message, say, I listen to this podcast, I'm really inspired, want to connect. I also have the website on there, JAKOBGRICAR.com. I launched a private podcast, which is just raw, unfiltered, unedited voice notes for me. So it's like a solo subscription based where I share behind the scenes of building a multi six figure business from different clients, coaching hundreds of clients. And just sometimes I get off the client call and just feel inspired and I just send a voice message in there. And then we're going to launch the next round of our 12-week program likely in November. So again, I'll be announcing all of that on Instagram and on my website and through the community as well.
Beautiful. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.